Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Eat Your Heartland Out. I'm your host, Capri Cafaro. On today's show, we are bringing together guests united in one mission: to empower through food. Its preparation, its consumption, and the sense of community it can bring makes food uniquely suited as a universal tool of empowerment. And our next guests are leaders in what I would call the food empowerment movement. Maya Camille Broussard is a self-taught baker. She founded Justice of the Pies in honor of her late father, who has both a passion for the law and for pies. Maya Camille is committed to ending food insecurity and improving childhood nutrition throughout Chicago's most challenged neighborhoods. Ruth Lefrec is the lead employability tutor at Luminary Bakery in London, England. She brings us across the pond into Luminary's innovative training program for victims of domestic and gender-based violence. The bakery and its mission are a great example of how the food empowerment movement can thrive in regions across the globe. But first, I want to welcome Paula Haynes, the CEO of Freedom a la Carte in Columbus, Ohio. She's joined by her colleague, Mandy Knight, resource manager for the organization which helps survivors of human trafficking by providing them with work experience through catering. Ladies, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Paula, I want to start with you. Tell our audience about, since I'm clearly familiar, with the mission of Freedom a la Carte and a little bit of its history as well.
Sure. So our mission is to empower survivors here locally that have experienced sex trafficking and to empower them to build lives of freedom and to become self-sufficient. And we've been doing this for over 10 years here in Central Ohio. And we started as just an organization that partnered with our local judiciary system. We have a specialty docket in Franklin County called Catch Court that is specifically for women who've experienced human trafficking. And so we have partnered with them to help these women be successful. And we provided a mentorship program and launched that so that each woman had a mentor from the community to help her along on her journey. And the women were in treatment facilities and they were getting trauma counseling and coming to court every week and just really helping to rebuild their lives. But we realized, you know, 2 years into it that the women were doing great, but they had so many employment barriers, the arrested development, the lack of job experience, the criminal records. So, you know, 96% of the women we work with have been in jail or prison. And so they couldn't get a job. And how can you support yourself and not return to a lifestyle like in trafficking where if you can't earn an income to support yourself and your family?
Right.
So we put our heads together and said, as an organization, you know, the women that were leading it at the time, what can we do? And we came up with food. You know, food is such a wonderful tool to reach the community as well as build relationships within. You know, problems are solved in the kitchen. Women have gathered in the kitchen for generations, and it just has become this special tool for healing and rebuilding. And so we started with a food cart that we pushed around the city and grew into a catering company. We've really kind of developed a niche in drop-off catering, and we serve up really delicious box lunches and fresh pastries and then heavy appetizers. And that's really where we stick to. We stick to this wonderful niche that we have. And then this past April, we launched our first cafe, so a full-service cafe that we've been able to open to the public. So
you've done quite a bit, and I know it seems like a long amount of time, 10 years, but to grow this kind of organization and to reach so many women and to have such an impact in the Central Ohio community is really to be commended. I want to revisit the cafe in a little bit because I want you to tell us a little bit more about how you source it and the role that the cafe plays in supporting the mission. But I want to go and turn it over to Mandy, who serves as the resource manager, as I said, at Freedom a la Carte. Mandy, tell us about the nuts and bolts, about the actual services that are provided and how Freedom a la Carte supports survivors and gives them the tools to go on to thrive.
So we have three areas of major support. Our first area we like to call restoration, the second, growth, and the third is stability. So in that first area, the restoration piece, we're really is for catch support, so catch court support, the specialty docket Paula was sharing about, and then outreach. So like Paula said, we're partnered with catch court. So in that piece, we provide the women who are in catch court personal mentors, which become lifelong best friends. We provide an outing once a month for them every month to learn how to have fun in this recovery journey, make community, build connections. We provide lunches every week at their court session on Thursdays. They always have some kind of meal prepared for them. We also do jail support. So we have people that write letters, cards. We even put money on people's books so that they can get commissary or basic needs. Mm-hmm. And also like clothing, personal care items. And then we also have recently worked with a couple other outreach agencies and been able to provide them with different resources that they might need for the women that they're serving in their street outreach or strip club outreach or things like that. Mm-hmm. The second piece to that's growth. So that's our workforce development program. We hire survivors of sex trafficking and they become a part of our workforce development program. And so being a part of that, it's usually 6 to 24 months. And while you're in that program, you get paid workforce training. Our scheduling is very flexible around people's counseling, treatment, tutoring, court if they have court, children's services appointments, things like that, doctor's appointments. So we're really flexible. And we really want to encourage the women to grow personally and professionally. So we do have career mentors. We have education mentors. We help our women if they don't have a GED or high school diploma. We help them through the GED process along with an education mentor. If they want to do a trade, we'll get them into a trade certificate program. We help people go back to college. We offer scholarship funding for education as well. Trauma counseling for those women. They also receive case management services and substance use recovery support.
Wow.
And we also help that with that transition from our workforce development program into long-term employment, hopefully in a field that they really, want to work in. And recently we've had a lot more people in the community reach out with different levels and areas of professionalism that want to mentor our women, even an aviation program is
oh wow.
Is it's in the future. It's next year, but we're kind of looking into that. If a woman wants to become a pilot, we want to help her get there. So, and I actually, this last part, stability, is our butterfly program. And that's really what I oversee and I'm heavily a part of. And and our butterflies are the women who have maybe went through Catch and workforce development or not. They don't have to have went through these programs, but they're a little more into the long-term piece of their recovery journey. And they receive everything I listed for our workforce development program. Plus they get, we do butterfly outings once a month, similar to Catch. We have self-defense classes, and that's for everybody, actually. We have expungement assistance.
Wow.
We refer people out to other agencies if it's, you know, something that we can't cover under our scope. We have crisis services, job coaching. It's funny when people ask me what I do, my response is kind of like, well, what don't we do? So, and the cool thing about all this and being in this role is that I actually went through Catch Court myself, went through workforce development, moved on like a butterfly. I spread my wings and flew away for a little while. And I was a counselor somewhere else. And I was totally supported in that employment transition. And when the time was right and this position became available at Freedom, I couldn't help myself but to get back in and be a part of this team.
That's just wonderful. I mean, you've shared quite a bit about, not only the mission, but really more importantly, how that mission is fulfilled for people just like you. And the fact that you had such a positive experience where, like you said, you were fully supported, you know, you were able to thrive, that you wanted to come back and give back is just, I think says a lot about how valuable Freedom a la Carte is. And, you know, I asked you both to join this program because, you know, it is about the intersection of food and culture in the Midwest. But, you know, I think what I'm trying to convey to the audience is that food acts as a tool in very different but very powerful ways. And so while Freedom a la Carte does a million different things like you just described, the cornerstone of it was this catering, this drop-off catering. And, it's provided opportunities for survivors to get that workforce development experience. Paula, I want to come back to you because I recall hearing that Freedom a la Carte's catering program as a testament, I think, again, to how the strong reputation the organization has really gotten some big partners and some big contracts of some well-known entities in Central Ohio. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. And we're so grateful for that. And this is, we've had a partnership with the Ohio State University for, 4 or 5 years now. As a drop-off caterer, just an approved drop-off caterer for anyone on campus. And that has been just so fabulous and really helped us establish ourselves as that drop-off caterer and focus on that niche. We also have a nice partnership with Ohio Health that has really, it actually happened right before COVID.
Yeah.
And so we didn't get a lot of time to do things together, but now we're doing so much with them and we really appreciate that as well. And then Otterbein University, we're an approved caterer there. So we do a lot of catering on their campus as well.
So just to get a little bit of detail on, you know, sort of what role survivors play in this, in the catering side and what workforce development actually looks like in the context that overlap between the workforce development program and the catering business, so to speak. Mandy, can you speak to that? Like, what does that actually look like? Maybe walk us through a shift that a participating woman might be experiencing.
So the women in workforce development, there is, you know, a set schedule. Sometimes that changes, but that's typical of any workplace. The women come into work. And we've implemented what we call 9 at 9. So one of our supportive services staff, currently there's myself, my supervisor, and one other resource manager. One of us will go down and gather the women. And we, Kathy, my coworker, she likes to do like breathing and stretching. Mm-hmm. I like to do a check-in and make it fun and creative. Like if you were a weather, you know, what weather would you feel or be like today? And what does that feel like for you? And so we'll do that 9 at 9 to check in with everybody and make sure everyone's aware of how their coworkers are coming into the workspace for the day. And then the ladies are real busy in the kitchen. And we have volunteers that come in and help create the recipes. And it's really cool because the ladies sort of get to supervise those volunteers and guide them through how to do the process and how to make things. And I think that can be empowering to be able to teach others. And then certain days of the week, there's counseling for everyone, and they have a set time and day of the week. They see their counselor and they get to see that person here. I wish you could see the space. It's so beautiful and it would make a lot more sense, but up on the...
It's been years. I remember visiting because I really wanted to actually volunteer at Freedom a la Carte because I actually went back to school for my master's in social work while I was a state senator. But I was so inspired by learning about Freedom a la Carte. I wanted to volunteer and I went to wherever it was at the time. And I think you guys have moved on since then because that was probably like 2011.
Yeah.
So 2012. It was like right at the beginning.
Yeah. So we have a catering floor. We have the cafe floor. And then... above it all is the Freedom Loft and the Butterfly Lounge, and it's a beautiful space. And so the women typically work on the catering floor, the cafe floor, and then in the Freedom Loft, it's very, it's a very trauma-informed design, the color schemes, the space, the rooms, and we have a room called the Green Room, and it's got like not natural lighting, I'm sorry, but it's got a lamp, so it's not fluorescent lighting, very comfy chairs, soundproofing walls, and the ladies get to do their counseling in that room. And so they come into work, and then on the certain day there's counseling, they have that opportunity, and then day and time a week, each woman gets to meet with a supportive services staff. And trust me, it ends up happening a lot more than once a week, but it's scheduled once a week that they meet with supportive services, the employment coach or resource manager, and work on their professional goals. Or they might be having a daycare issue or just any kind of issues, they're able to work that out here and know that they're supported. And it relieves some of the stress of life to know like, hey, I am at work, but I have like this huge team upstairs that's like rooting for me and helping me accomplish these things. So then they get to meet with the supportive services or employment coach, like I said, and then, they work in the kitchen and they also have opportunity for growth. One of our ladies, recently became the lead delivery driver. Her career goal is to get her CDLs.
Oh, wow.
And so we were able to create this lead delivery driving position for her so that she could be in charge of, you know, figuring out the routes and the deliveries and being a part of that process so she can, you know, get ready for that career. And then we have a catering lead who started in the workforce development program. And now she's really taken off and she's in college and her career goal is to be a social worker, but she was still able to move forward within Freedom. And she did her internship here. And, you know, so whatever it is we can do for the women here, we will sure find a way.
It definitely sounds like it. And like I said, I mean, I've always been really inspired by the work that you do. And I think it provides a lot of good insight to really understand what goes into what maybe I would refer to as a trauma-informed workplace in many ways, because, you know, you are finding those ways to get around those barriers by creating your own environment and doing things like having, you know, that lead delivery position and, you know, enabling someone to have that on their resume whose, you know, career goal is to have a commercial driver's license, a CDL, and be, you know, a professional driver. So Paula, speaking of delivering food, I'm thinking about delivering to that cafe. Tell me, the cafe is brand new. Where is it at? Who does it serve? And I think most importantly, in some ways, You know, when is, how do you source the ingredients in the food that you serve there for the cafe?
Sure. So we, in this beautiful new building, are located in downtown Columbus. The address is 123 East Spring Street. And the amazing thing is that we found this building that allows us to operate all of our catering, as well as this cafe and our survivor resource center called The Loft, all in one place. We have a parking lot that is ours, so we can offer customers free parking as well. And then there's pay lots for overflow and obviously metered parking. And something that I think makes us special at Freedom is really taking the food that we serve and making sure it's just elevating it a little bit. So instead of, you know, on our catering menu, instead of just a turkey sandwich, we do a turkey tango, which also has, you know, chimichurri sauce on it and roasted red peppers. And so it's just really making it special, because we know that people might come and support our social enterprise because they connect with the mission and they want to support the mission, but to build a business that can then help these women on their journey, we need something that's sustainable. And so if we can really exceed expectations, we can have people come back again and again. We source everything locally that we can. Everything's fresh, made from scratch. We have our own baker that does fresh pastries every day for the cafe. Croissants is a specialty of ours that we've developed for the cafe. In fact, our breakfast sandwich is called a rosemary breakfast sandwich. And we make our own rosemary lemon sausage and serve that with an egg and provolone cheese and lemon aioli with arugula. And we serve it on a croissant bun that we've created. So it's just trying to take things and make them really special, because that's how we would want to treat someone that comes into our home. And we see this as our home to the community. So we have business people coming in that work downtown, but we have lots of people traveling downtown to visit the cafe.
That's great news. And I can see why, because as you said, I mean, you're providing a product that is attracting people to come back time and time again as repeat customers. And that's what you need if you want to be able to utilize that, you know, that cafe to be able to support the mission of Freedom a la Carte in a sustainable way. You guys have done an excellent, excellent job. I just continue to be amazed, but not surprised by what you're doing at Freedom a la Carte. Paula and Mandy, again, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedules to join us and share about Freedom a la Carte to a wider audience. More importantly, thank you for everything that you're doing for survivors of trafficking in Central Ohio and hopefully maybe beyond one of these days.
Today's program was brought to you by Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. Roth has made specialty cheese in the rolling hills of Wisconsin for more than 30 years. With strong Swiss heritage, Roth is best known for its award-winning Alpine-style Grand Cru cheeses. Fresh Wisconsin milk, combined with expertise in affinage, is how Roth creates high-quality, great-tasting cheese year after year. In 2016, hard work paid off when out of over 2,000 contenders, Roth Grand Cru Sir Choix was named world champion at the World Cheese Championship. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
Welcome back to Eat Your Heartland Out. Our next guest is Ruth Lefrec, lead employability tutor at Luminary Bakery, a program based in London, England, that trains survivors of domestic abuse and gender-based violence to become bakers.
Why don't we start off with maybe you could share with us how Luminary Bakery was founded and what inspired that mission?
So we began, Luminary began when our founder, Alice, was working in East London. And she was meeting with women who were involved in the sex industry and homeless and experiencing sort of extreme poverty, disadvantage and general gender-based violence. And they had very few kind of opportunities to leave this. We know that kind of homeless women are at risk of serious sexual exploitation and getting caught up in crime. And then kind of parallel to that, we know that domestic violence is the single kind of biggest driver of homelessness. So this kind of dimension where these meet is multiple disadvantage and a critical factor or critical factors in changing these circumstances are employment and independence. And this was the inspiration to founding Luminary, starting Luminary. We wanted to be a place to offer training and employment and community. We want to offer opportunities and hope.
Why baking? Why cooking? Why, you know, why this vocation as that tool of empowerment and giving women hope?
We've seen women kind of come through our space and find something that they're incredible at that they would never maybe have thought of themselves as being incredible at before. They've kind of stepped into a space of creativity. They've been making something for themselves. It can be quite therapeutic without involving therapy and kind of seeing kind of basic ingredients and then being like, oh, I've made this bread or I've made these cinnamon swirls or I've made these choux pastries. That's where kind of new thinking can kind of come in, new ideas of skills and of strengths and the qualities that they have and have had this whole time. It's almost kind of being cleared out in front of them. And that's where we see baking just being incredible. It's also this opportunity to kind of share food with others and share learning with others. We've seen kind of endless kind of helpfulness come out of that space as well.
That's wonderful. So walk us through what you do, you know, sort of the nuts and bolts of, you know, the employability program that's affiliated with Luminary Bakery. You know, if a woman wanted to participate, how do they learn about the program? How do they get into the program?
Yeah, for sure. So we've actually done this huge revamp of our employability program over the last couple of years with a lot of input from past trainees, asking them what they needed more of, what they needed less of, what we could do to kind of support them better and bring in more kind of employment opportunities and kind of and independence opportunities that meant that they could leave our space or leave kind of the direct support from Luminary feeling confident in kind of who they are. So to answer your first question, so I'll walk it through kind of step by step. So women kind of hear from us in loads of different spaces, a lot of women's services, refuges, and kind of spaces where it's just women. We go through kind of different avenues, so like local boroughs and local councils will kind of do talks at to involve social workers and that. So they have to be referred to us by a professional, but they might see kind of the work that we do and go to their professional and say, I want to do this, can we work together on this application? And then they'll come and do an interview with us, and then once they've got a space on the program, they'll be working with us for 2 years. So the whole employability and independence program is 2 years long and split down into four sections of 6 months. So for the first year, they're a trainee. Phase one is all about learning to bake to a professional standard. So they might start kind of really simple, but gaining basic skills and techniques, and then building up over that first 6 months where they're becoming kind of masters of bread and pastry and dessert. And we kind of really encourage them to keep practicing wherever they can around that. And then alongside that, we're facilitating kind of sessions and that are based around kind of soft and kind of practical skills. So writing a budget plan and writing a skills-based CV, kind of as they start to dig into these unique strengths and explore what they'd love to do. And then this then moves on into kind of more conversation-led sessions, which we call our holistic development sessions. And they're really around kind of self-reflection and development, and considering our resilience, self-compassion, endurance, and kind of boundaries as well, as we kind of build our networks and that kind of thing.
So let's take a pause just right there for a minute, if I may, because the holistic development sessions I find very interesting and compelling. And, you know, my listeners may not know this, but I did mention this to you before, but you know, I'm a licensed social worker in Ohio and trained and worked with and still am involved, with my local, domestic violence shelter, which, you know, as you would call it, a refuge, you know, in the UK. And, you know, in trying to work with women in these kind of environments, it's the fact that you are able or you're aiming to integrate these type of, you know, self-care, self-empowerment, strength-based approaches into, you know, essentially an employability course, I find just fascinating. So, how does that even work, right? So you're in the training room, you're learning how to bake. You know, are your participants talking about some of these other aspects like relationships, self-compassion, boundaries while they're baking, or is it a separate, you know, sort of an ancillary and supported separate class or session?
Sure. So it's within the same day. So we do offer one-to-one support kind of through the entire program, but these sessions are specifically for the group and their conversations. So say we're making chocolate cake one day, we might make the cake, put it in the oven, make the icing, set that to one side, and then set an hour for this conversation. So we might move rooms, or we might kind of just sit around in the circle or around the table, kind of have food together and have this conversation together. So kind of I would facilitate that and bring in ideas and bring in kind of thoughts and things that we might be talking about during that session. But everybody's welcome to participate. And we have kind of ideas that we want to be bringing through and a thread that we have through every single session that we'll keep kind of leading back to. But that's kind of how they're involved in the day. And then the reason kind of we've integrated it, I guess, is when we're thinking about, let's say, resilience, we're bringing in ideas of how do I step up again if I feel like I failed? How do I step up again if something set me back? How do I speak to myself kindly when I feel like I've done something wrong or I'm not good enough? All of these are actually really integral in being able to manage the employment process. So going to a job interview, being hired, having a conversation with your boss where they're saying, actually, this wasn't good enough. What are you going to do about it? And that's where kind of the self-reflection and all of these kind of sessions have been written to underpin the employability kind of side of it.
Right. Well, not to mention the fact that as you know, you're talking about some of these things, I don't see it just as an employability issue, but frankly, you know, being kind to yourself in the kitchen, you know, it's sometimes very difficult. I mean, there's a lot of fails before you get, you know, the sort of the perfect, you know, cake or cupcake or, you know, design or whatever. And so being, you know, not having it be perfect the first time and not saying, well, you know what, I guess this isn't for me is definitely... I can see how those skills are appropriately integrated here. That's just great. So we walked through phase one, right? A little bit. But as you mentioned at the beginning of this, it's a 2-year program, which is pretty intensive. Yeah. And there's two more phases. So, let's continue through the process.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it is intensive, definitely, but it's one day a week for the first year. And then kind of over the second year, that's where women kind of step into their own independence a little bit more and maybe step back from kind of being on site all the time. But I'll go into that in a little bit more detail kind of after phase two. So phase two is where the trainees kind of participate in employability sessions and seminars. So it's just the morning, and that's where they're thinking about kind of goal setting and professional writing, so emails and letters and that kind of thing, interview practice and writing job applications, these kind of things, the things that are going to kind of really build practical confidence or when they're kind of stepping into finding work and looking at work. And they'll also get their work experience in the Lumino business at this point as well, so either in our bakery or in our cafe. And their support worker as well, as I said, they're supported through the entire program by a support worker. There might be me for the first 6 months and then another progression support worker ongoing from there. And they'll maybe help them apply for work or further education or training if that's what they want to do as well.
And the progression support worker, right, works one-on-one with the women and is, you know, really working specifically working tailored to that individual's needs, right?
Yeah, exactly. We want to kind of offer them what they need to succeed. So we have kind of multiple meetings with each woman throughout the year, kind of asking what they need at that point, how we're going to work on that together, what needs to happen next. And obviously, so that's me for the first 6 months, but progression support for the next 18 months, they get to build a really kind of positive and healthy relationship with that woman as they kind of move through into independence, where they kind of take on challenges, maybe outside of their comfort zone a bit. The progression support worker is also there to really advocate for women who are maybe kind of outside of networks and that kind of thing, so that they can move forward and keep going forward.
I gotta say that the commitment that it takes on behalf of both the staff and the individual women that are, you know, committed to going through this program is really significant. And what really surprised me in learning about this is that while I know that, that some of the courses started back in 2014, this particular, program of employability, just started in 2019, right? And really kind of launched right kind of in the midst or right before the pandemic, right?
So we started in 2013, we got our first cafe in 2016, and then we moved to Camden in 2019, which is where we have our training room. It's where we were able to offer four training cohorts per week. It's taken a big step. I guess what COVID did, like a lot of places, was it made us have to completely rethink things, but it also meant that we had space to review and rescale. And I think what we've come up with so far is incredible. We're already seeing incredible outcomes and women kind of coming through with much more independence factors and employment factors already. Not to say they've also had like more opportunity for community because they're in Luminary more often. Hopefully really positive moving forward.
Sure, absolutely. So, I want to touch a little bit on the successes and the women that Luminary has touched. We'll talk more about some of the stats issues at some point, but how many women have gone through and have graduated in this, sort of first module these last 2 years?
So last year we supported 53 women, or we were supporting 53 women over the whole of Luminary. We supported 107 women, and our kind of, graduation start at the moment is, 70%. 88%. Our trainees have completed employability and independence programs so far.
That's strong.
That was in 2020.
That's very, very strong. So, we talked about this a bit at the beginning of the conversation, but I think that it is important to kind of reiterate it again, as far as really painting a picture of who Luminary is helping. And how. So, you just went through a list of numbers, you know, of over 100 women and 77%, you know, graduation and all of these things. But each one of those numbers is a human. It's important to paint that human picture. Those people that are, you know, making the cakes that you can go and buy at Luminary in Camden or in Stoke Newington, correct? And as well as in the London area. So with every single slice of cake has a human story behind it as well. Who are those women that you're helping and how have their lives been impacted?
Yeah, okay. As I said at the beginning, kind of the women we're working with have just experienced true extreme trauma, and we're here to kind of provide a platform for them. So pretty much every woman who comes through our doors has experienced gender-based violence, and she is here to gain employment, gain skills, gain a kind of more positive future for herself. So I won't tell kind of specific individual stories. I do believe that they're for each individual woman to tell, and actually you can see, you can read their stories in our cookbook, Rising Hope. That's all there. Throughout the pages there are double page spreads of their stories, so I'd really recommend reading them and being inspired by them. They're incredible. We also have our impact reports on our website, and there are a couple of case studies in there that we've written with the women and kind of talking about their stories, where they've come through, and how Luminary has kind of impacted them as well. I guess for me, the most significant moments are the changes in thinking and perspectives of themselves and the world as they move through the programme. So maybe we have a woman who comes to her first meeting, and understandably, she's tearful. She's very deep in the trauma that she's experienced, and she does not trust. And then kind of as she comes through her training days and she starts to achieve these incredible bakes that she didn't know that she could do, and learn new skills and kind of start communicating with new people and feeling safe in that space and share those bakes. And then get to explore her creativity. I love seeing them explore their creativity and make really unique and beautiful bakes that are their own, that is her own. And then feel more confident in kind of trying something new and stepping out. So maybe changing up that decoration. It seems like something small, but actually is really significant. Or maybe changing up that ingredient so it has a slightly different flavour. That's choice and that's autonomy. And I love seeing that in the room, kind of bringing in like the things that she wants to do, not the things that we're telling her to do. And that's kind of why I'm here. I'm here to support her through and hopefully offer kind of helpful challenges and encourage that new thinking.
Well, that's powerful. That is powerful. And the way that you describe that, you know, these small things, like just like, you know, being confident because you baked something beautiful and embedding that autonomy in small choices, which have big impact. That's huge. And, you know, I am looking forward to learning more about Luminary Bakery and its mission. And, as we started our conversation, you're all the way across on the other side of the world. But, I think that this story is universal. And, you know, from Columbus, Ohio to Camden in North London, food is helping women reclaim their lives, reclaim their confidence. Ruth, thank you so much for joining the program and educating our audience about the work of Luminary Bakery.
You're listening to Eat Your Heartland Out. Our final guest this hour is Maya Camille Broussard. Maya is the founder of Justice of the Pies in Chicago and is one of the stars of Bake Squad, a new series on Netflix.
Introduce us to you and to Justice of the Pies. I mean, I found Justice of the Pies just through doing some research. You're in Chicago, and I just got drawn to the name and then found out about everything behind it. How did you start this?
I created Justice of the Pies in 2014 in memory of my late father, Steve Broussard, My dad was a criminal defense attorney, and his hobby was baking and eating pies. So I created the bakery to celebrate his love of pies and to honor his belief that people deserve second chances.
I got to ask you, what were some of his favorite pies to make and to eat?
Well, he really loved to make quiches, but one of his favorite pies to make was an apple cranberry pie.
Oh, that's great. I actually make an apple cranberry almond pie around the Thanksgiving time. That is a fantastic one. You don't always see that combination. That's great. How did he get into baking pies as his hobby as a criminal defense attorney?
My dad had a lot of hobbies. I mean, the number one hobby was eating, but he was a master scuba diving instructor. My dad was a pilot. He took pilot lessons later on in life. He loved to learn other languages. He became fluent in Swahili, and he was a community theater actor. So he spent his weekends in plays and being a thespian. So he had a lot of hobbies. I likened him to Forrest Gump, but with a higher IQ.
That's one hell of a comparison, but I see where you're going, that, you know, it's almost this like Renaissance man that does all of the things. And it's just wonderful that you were, you know, inspired to use his legacy and his passion to follow your own. And you're incredibly accomplished in your own right. You said you started Justice of the Pies in 2014, but you are not a classically, quote unquote, classically trained baker, right? Or pastry maker.
I grew up with a family of women who were amazing and still are amazing in the kitchen. My dad's family is originally from Louisiana, and for me, Louisiana is another powerhouse in terms of culinary, as a culinary state, because I believe that Chicago is a powerhouse in terms of culinary. So I learned from my aunts and from my cousins about baking and different recipes all while growing up. And so I naturally was able to transition from the arts world into the culinary arts world.
That makes a lot of sense. And so you grew up baking, like many of us. I mean, isn't it such a blessing to have those talented women in the kitchen, you know, passing those traditions down? I mean, I can say the same, you know, growing up, learning from my grandmother, all of the things as an Italian, you know, all of the different types of things that she would make. That I later on ended up, you know, passing on. And my sister also, you know, does, you know, makes those recipes. And you carry that with you. It's a way that we carry tradition. But you went one step further and actually started a bakery, which is not an easy business to get into. And then, you know, you said you did it to honor your dad's commitment to second chances. And I know that Justice of the Pies is committed to lifting people up and doing that, you know, through culinary arts. I'd love you to tell us about, you know, some of the programs as part of your mission to give back to the community and lift people up.
Sure. So Justice of the Pies is an L3C. We are a social mission-based bakery. And our goal is to positively impact the lives of those who work with us. We like to see ourselves as stewards for fairness and equality. And so we have a lot of different initiatives that we activate that centers around our ethos. But one of the initiatives that's very near and dear to us is our I Need Love workshop. The workshop is geared towards children who reside in lower income communities that are affected by food apartheid. Most mm-hmm. of the children tend to be in grades 5th through 8th grades, but we often do work with high schoolers as well. And in these workshops, we are teaching the children about basic kitchen skills, developing their nutritional development, and cultivating their creativity in the kitchen. The goal of these workshops is to help children become more self-sufficient in the kitchen.
Right, which makes sense. How do you recruit the, or at least connect with the students that participate in the workshop? And then how are they structured, you know, to pass those skills along?
So in the workshops, we are not only just following a recipe, and I'm not just teaching them a recipe, but I'm also teaching them the why behind some of the ingredients that we're using. Mm. The idea is you can have something sweet, but let's use all natural ingredients that your body is going to process. You know, we're not talking about overprocessed foods. We're not talking about foods that you get from the corner store. We're talking about going to the grocery store and picking up butter instead of margarine, picking up fresh produce instead of canned vegetables or canned fruit. The goal is to show the children that, you know, you can eat whatever you want. One, it has to be in moderation. And two, it is healthier if you make it yourself. Mm-hmm. And children often are eating things, and, you know, well, children and adults, we don't know what we're putting in our bodies. And so when we're making a quiche or when we are making a pie, we're talking about the nutritional benefits of some of the ingredients, whether it's the antioxidants in blueberries or the vitamins that are in spinach. We are aiming to help the children have a better understanding of the foods that you eat and why you should include it in your recipe.
I love that. I mean, and we need more and more of that, you know, integrated for all children, you know, to really understand what they're putting in, because, you know, savvy children make savvy adults, and it's needed even more in communities, you know, communities of color, low income communities that, you know, are experiencing food apartheid, don't have, you know, access to affordable, healthy foods, maybe not, you know, familiar with how to prepare these type of foods because they don't have any experience with them. But then the fact that you go behind the music, so to speak, and explain the why really is so important. What kind of reaction do you get from the kids?
The kids definitely love the workshop. They're always asking the administrators of the partnering organizations, when can we go back? You know, I want to take another class. They offer me recipe ideas. They absolutely love being involved. And I think that a lot of kids are not used to cooking because perhaps an adult doesn't trust them in the kitchen to be around a stove and to be around an oven. But when you give a child a sense of responsibility, then they actually feel as though they can be trusted with navigating their way around the kitchen.
Sure. I mean, and I would say that that's, you know, that is that piece of empowerment. You know, as I'm listening to this, it makes me wonder, I mean, do you have maybe ideas or plans on, you know, maybe taking something like one step further for, you know, some of these kids that quote unquote graduate from the workshop to do maybe a longer program or an apprenticeship program or something like that as they get into high school or beyond? Are you thinking about maybe expanding some of that and building upon it? Not that you don't have enough to do.
Right. But no, I tend to also work with other organizations such as Rick Bayless Impact Culinary Program. So I don't necessarily have to create that from scratch. There are already great programs out there that do that kind of thing. All I have to do is just come in and offer my experience, my services, and the knowledge that I can share. Rick Bayless Impact Culinary Program works with kids in terms of job readiness. So they're actually training them for 8 weeks so that they could be ready to go into a restaurant. So from there, I can work with the kids and do an internship with them for 2 weeks where they would stage in my kitchen. And then that would allow me to decide, like, do I want to continue working with them? Do they want to continue working with me? Again, that's something that's already out there. So I tend to work with kids who are younger. My goal is to get them while they're young so that they can grow their interest in it as they mature in age.
Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. Again, people, I mean, look, just even in our, you know, little conversation here, the fact of the matter is that, you know, we were exposed early to, you know, baking and cooking and that sort of thing. And it sparks an interest. You just don't know where those sort of things are going to go. And it's wonderful that you're engaging, you know, the children that way. I also understand that you also help prepare meals for communities as well, at least sometimes for Chicago South Side. Is that right?
So that was something that we did during the pandemic. We partner with Frontline Foods to provide meals for frontline workers, but also I've partnered with different organizations to provide meals for residents who are most affected by the pandemic in terms of not having access to employment, and which then leads to not having access to meals in general. So in 2020, we provided over 3,500 meals. And then in 2021, we were able to provide close to 3,000 meals.
And what's involved with those meals? I mean, I feel like there's got to be quiche in there somewhere, right?
Yes, we do make quiche. Some of the meals that we did over the winter, they were a little bit more heavy. So we did our shepherd's pie and pot pie. So we also do a lot of pot pie. So we did a chicken and biscuit pot pie and shepherd's pie with salad. You know, it's a full meal. So we, you know, put a salad and, of course, a cookie in there. And we would drop it off to shelters in the cities.
Fantastic. Well, this gives me a great opportunity to shift gears here for a minute and ask about literally, you know, what you offer at Justice of the Pies for people that may be visiting Chicago. You know, what can they expect if they walk into Justice of the Pies and want to get something to eat?
Some of our most popular pies include the strawberry basil key lime pie. And with fall coming up, we are working on a sweet potato and plantain pie. Blue cheese praline pear pie is also really popular. And we have a German chocolate bourbon pecan pie that is flying off the shelf. So we do a lot of unorthodox and unconventional flavors and pie varieties. And that is something that people can expect when they get a pie from Justice of the Pies.
So how do you come up with those unique flavor combinations?
A lot of my creativity is stemmed from my travels. So when I travel and I experience new things, then it is instant inspiration for when I go back to my own kitchen.
Makes sense. And I can tell just from what you just described that there's clearly an authenticity in those experiences that you bring directly back into the bakery. And I definitely, even though I'm from Ohio, I don't get to Chicago very often. And I feel like I'm going to have to make an effort to do so. Every time I speak to someone on this show, it makes me you know, excited and inspired to get in a car and just start driving west somewhere to see and meet and experience all the things that I've talked to, all the people I've talked to while I've been doing this show. And of course, speaking of shows, I can't let you go without asking you, first saying congratulations to you for being part of a new Netflix series, which is called, what, Bake Squad, right?
Correct. Bake Squad is a family-friendly competition. We were all hand-picked by Chef Christina Tosi, who is the founder of Milk Bar, which is a huge baking empire here in the United States, and I believe there's a location in Canada. Chef Tosi handpicked four bakers, and each baker specializes in something different, whether it's sugar, chocolate, intense flavors, or cake. And we each bake something for a deserving individual who is celebrating a life milestone, whether it's a wedding, a birthday, or kicking cancer's butt. We all come together to help each other, but we are vying for the bragging rights as, you know, we try to win each bake. So it is a very heartfelt, feel-good show that also has a lot of fun elements in which we play around in the kitchen and we joke around, but also we're very serious about our art.
Well, I can't wait to tune into that. I was excited to learn of it as I reached out to you. I had no idea. And then learned from some of your colleagues that you were going to be on Bake Squad. And now hearing a little bit more about it as well, I definitely want to check it out because that feel good factor, you know, getting in there to, you know, share your art and your passion to celebrate someone's milestone even makes just, it really is a feel good story. I love it. I am so glad that I've had a chance to meet you and hope to do so in person one of these days. I want to thank you for sharing your passion and your mission of Justice of the Pies with our listening audience.
Eat Your Heartland Out is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.